there's always going to be a need for improving or rewriting business process, right? So business process reengineering, which is a very old phrase now, is in our new vernacular, it's called design thinking. It's called agile. It's called other things, right? So someone has to do that work. And then in our world of technology, we make the assumption that innovation is always about tech. Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. But you have to have the right tech stack. So I find companies do the third one really consistently. It's really the challenge that you're describing. Does it make it smooth? Is the people part of the pyramid?
Okay.
Welcome to Innovation Talks. Join us weekly as we discuss with distinguished industry guests how to refine and improve corporate innovation and new product development. Hosted by Paul Heller, Sophion Chief Evangelist.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I hope we're having a great week. My guest today is Alex Adamopoulos, and he's the CEO of a company called Emergen. And they're a firm focused on improving the way people and companies work. You know, our podcast has covered a few aspects of dual innovation in the past, including how hard it is. And I saw a paper that Alex wrote entitled The Dual Mindset of Organization, which was very intriguing and caused me to reach out and ask if Adam would be on our show. And he graciously said he would. So, Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. Very great. Privileged to be here. Appreciate you making time.
You bet. And how are you today?
I'm doing well. Very good for an afternoon.
Yeah. Where are you joining us from?
I'm in our London office today.
And Emergen, tell us about your company.
Yeah. So we've been in business since 2009, going on our 15th year. We're a global business. We work in this segment called digital business services, which is really about helping companies, mostly large enterprises, actually handle or solve this problem of what they call transformation fatigue. You know, large programs of work that are stalling or they don't know how to actually push them forward, measure success. And we typically get involved and help them solve some of these challenges and accelerate their ability to execute, whether it's delivering a product, a service, market share, you name it. We've built our niche over 15 years, just bringing some of that expertise to life and removing the fat and the waste and the bureaucracy from, I guess, consulting overall.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you talk about transformation fatigue and whether it be business transformation, which a lot of companies are in various aspects of, or digital transformation. You know, I've seen a lot of companies that are really almost perpetually in digital transformation. As soon as they kind of finish it, maybe over 5 or 10 years, they've started over again. Is that the type of fatigue you're talking about?
That's a big part of it. I think to your point, large companies, I mean, I guess even medium to large companies, they have this consistent reorganization that happens. So you've got new people come in, they feel compelled, they have to do it differently than the previous team. So they kick it up again, rebudget, refocus. So that's a part of it. But the other part of it too is just that some of these programs are not managed well across the whole. There are gaps, there are challenges along the way that aren't identified until it's too late. And then, you know, you get the statistics that we've seen now for decades that 70 to 75% of large programs of work that they call transformation typically fail.
Yeah. I have a feeling every listener right now is nodding their head and can speak to having experienced it to some degree. So let's go into innovation a little bit. So Alex, let's start. Some of our listeners may not be familiar with the term or may not have heard me talk about it in the past, but let's talk about what is dual innovation.
The dual mindset that we talk about is this whole idea of how do you take new business models and new ideas that are constantly being discussed inside organizations, and how do you link them successfully with what happens on the ground when teams go and build something? So one of the things that we've seen for a long time now is a disconnect between innovation management and product management, which is why we affectionately named it the dual mindset. It's not that the company's divided in their thinking. It's more that innovation, and you've probably seen this as well, is historically not tie to what we might call the core business. So some companies set up these things called innovation labs, or you see people off in another city or another location doing research. And how that translates back to what we do next is often disconnected. So the dual mindset phrase came up for us as a way to describe what we see, where one mode is about inventing the future, and we call this explore, and one mode is about managing the present, and we call this exploit. And it's bringing them together so you can solve it.
Yeah. You know, we've on the podcast, we've talked about that a couple of times, but it's always been about organizationally, maybe how do you approach it, but how do you fund it, what the processes are behind it, how the processes are different. But the word mindset, I really like that word mindset. Tell me what kind of, how did you choose that word?
We chose it because a lot of what needs to happen when you innovate, or then you actually transform or change a business model or develop a product, the mindset, the thinking behind how you do it is equally, if not more important than the physical or actual work. And one of the things that companies struggle with today is talent development and talent retention. Everyone wants to be digital. Everyone is going out to move at speed, move at scale. And a lot of the skills that exist in companies aren't keeping up with the need to innovate or change. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we often talk about is mindset, because mindset, the way you actually think about work, the lens through which you see change, is very effective in terms of the success that you will have on the back end. So if I had to translate the word mindset to something else, I would say it needs to be education-led transformation. In other words, it's the continuous learning mindset, the thinking that I can do more, I can do it different. And that's typically what we see as a success in businesses.
Gotcha. And is this something that leadership is necessary? Is it leadership? Is it culture? Is it individuals? Kind of, how do you see that all playing together?
That's a great question. We see this whole dual mindset, I guess, component sitting across four different characteristics, right? And starting with leadership, leadership struggles with uncertainty. Right. In some aspects, if you're looking at the explore side, uncertainty is very high. You don't know if the new product or business model is going to work. But if you're in the product management area of the company where you're actually building now, there's still uncertainty, but it's relatively low because you have more experience. You're looking at empirical data. You feel good about running the business. So leadership for us is definitely something that is critical to the success of any program, and getting them to manage the whole idea of uncertainty is very important, because we have to kind of bring the two together, the very high uncertainty and the relatively low one. The other one I would say is focus. There's a growing trend around this word focus that we see, where some people are looking to make their organizations future-proof, right? They want to be able to experiment with a portfolio of potential products and value propositions with some level of, you know, focus and certainty, where on the other side, the challenge is you have to fine-tune those things and make them more efficient, you have to demonstrate that they're delivering value. So I'll pause there because it's a long answer, but I will say you said the key word. It is leadership, right? It starts at the top. That has never changed, and I don't think it will.
Yeah. And some leadership is very good at leading organizations through uncertainty, and some other leadership has less skill at that, less experience, or, you know, it really doesn't like risk. As you said, to drive the risk out. And if you're on the explore side, it's all about risk. You can't drive it out. You have to embrace it, right?
You do. And isn't it Peter Drucker who told us that, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast?
Yeah. That's right.
And it's so from a leadership perspective, the culture of an innovation organization or innovative organization that really wants to deliver products and services faster to the market and not just sit on the ideas, it involves having an appetite for risk. It also involves embracing failures quickly and realizing that the big ideas actually can start small and taking those steps without trying to figure it all out up front.
And, you know, you're going to balance, I guess, the openness or the flexibility versus the operational discipline. And I think, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you do that, how you have an organization that's maybe a well-tuned operational, that's probably on the exploit side of innovation. They just know how to do it. And then the explore side is just it's a blank page.
So what we like to do is we like to talk to them about this idea of having an operating model. And to your point, on the explore side, operating models are about fast and iterative learning cycles, getting the people in the business that are core to helping design or fund an idea and work on an idea together so they can do exploratory kind of work and quickly vet what the highest or most valuable idea is to actually invest in. So those kinds of operating models are things that we design and execute with leaders on a weekly basis. But then connecting that operating model to what we call as a product estate or a product operating model that then the people that are doing the work take from those teams, and then they fine-tune them and they get working on them in incremental value pieces is really where it comes together. Because I'll tell you now, and I think this is what we see across large enterprises, everyone is struggling to define two words, product and value.
Huh.
I feel like innovation is we're kind of getting what it means. We know it's a big word, but when it comes to what does it look like, it looks like a product. And it can be physical, it can be digital, but it's something that we call a product. But then how do we know it's going to work? We have to be able to deliver or demonstrate incremental value in the work that we're doing. And this is where the operating models that we design and work with our clients is based on those incremental value phases, because otherwise you're just not going to know until it's too late.
Yeah. And what challenges do companies have? Because you mentioned kind of, it almost looks like a flow. You've got the explore operating model and the product, the exploit operating model. But there's a transformation, isn't there? When you finally get to something to say, okay, we've been using it, we've been working this way to figure it out, and there is something here, and now we have to go to this other model. Is that a smooth transformation or is that a risky transformation? How do companies do that?
It's definitely not smooth. risky for some, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the old pyramid, people, process, and technology?
Yeah.
It's funny how that doesn't have an expiration date, really. So what we see in that change that you're describing is there's always going to be a need for improving or rewriting business process, right? So business process reengineering, which is a very old phrase now, is in our new vernacular, it's called design thinking. It's called agile. It's called other things, right?
Yeah.
So someone has to do that work.
Yeah.
And then in our world of technology, we make the assumption that innovation is always about tech. Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. But you have to have the right tech stack. So I find companies do the third one really consistently. It's really the challenge that you're describing. Does it make it smooth? Is the people part of the pyramid?
Okay.
And giving people the skills and giving them the enablement and equipping them to actually do the work with modern ways of working, modern ways of thinking, tools, practices, even theory is really the part that we specialize in. We do all three parts of the pyramid, but what we find is the most important part is bringing people on the journey, because that's the reason transformations succeed. And that's how you solve transformation fatigue.
Yeah.
It's the people part.
Yeah. And I hear what you're saying. I mean, there's so little in business, there's so little focus on developing those types of skills. You know, okay, we're going to send you to a project management course. And so now you have a skill in running a project. But the type of skills you're talking about, you know, that's a little, we need more of that. I agree with that. Yeah.
We do. And I think where we've seen the benefit is in helping people across several roles in both business and IT. So if you're going from a project-led organization to a product-led one,
yeah,
you're collapsing IT and business teams into a single unit, like a fusion team. They're connected. And you're no longer talking about business and IT. You're talking about the product team. And you have roles that are represented. And the idea is you need to get all of the roles that are represented, from product managers to business analysts to product owners to developers, mm-hmm. thinking about the work in a similar fashion, understanding how you measure it, what metrics you're going to design for success. All that work is what brings the continuity and the consistency to those teams. And those are the skills that we focus on with people, because it makes it more fluid and it helps avoid the mistakes that sometimes happen when they're disconnected.
Yeah. Are there any, in a non-confidential way, I don't want to get into confidentiality, but is there any examples that you can share on good or bad around that?
We have several public case studies on our website. We've been fortunate to be part of some amazing transformation programs where people were struggling with transformation fatigue. You know, there's several that we've worked with. We've done amazing work for Walmart, Fortune 1 company, and helping them understand what agile transformation looks like. Mm-hmm. It's distilled mm-hmm. down to that business process reengineering piece and attending to the people. We've done large learning programs where we've taken thousands of people through some of the learning exercises of the work I just described at places like Tesco. You know, that you might know in the UK, they're a very large global
yeah.
retailer. We've done work for GSK Pharmaceutical. We led their digital transformation. So a lot of the case studies that someone might see on our website, those success stories, they're grounded in coming in and addressing something that has either stalled or isn't producing the change at the speed someone expected. And, you know, I think there are several stories, but I think it's not that I have favorites, because they're all very different and very unique.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite stories is, if you remember, a U.S. company called Vistaprint.
Ah.
Yeah, one of the largest e-commerce companies. They're now called Simpress. So one of our best pieces of work with Vistaprint was embedding this thinking, this mindset you described, we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Across the whole organization, where they actually took it to the extreme and had set up, you know, Kanban boards on every floor, from the executive floor down to that practitioner floor. All their metrics and measures were aligned and designed to showcase the value they were producing when they were delivering or releasing product. So they are an organization, I'd say, is best practice, who really took it to heart. Where other large enterprises do it more at the department level, not the enterprise level.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the company. But I think we're fortunate to have many great examples that we've been involved with.
Yeah. That was actually a question I think was in my mind is, does it have to be a corporate-wide, all-in type of approach? Or are there ways to, you know, different either operating units or divisions or departments? Or how small can it be, where you can at least get some success and get some change happening?
Frankly, we always recommend a modest start, because the most important thing to solving transformation fatigue or even starting a program successfully is you want to create something we call a pull model, not a push model.
Okay.
So do a small piece of work, and small might be relative to the outside observer. It might be enormous, but it's a piece of work that the organization can digest. And then that piece of work is almost like a proof of the value that's possible. It's demonstrable. We then recommend that we showcase it. And then what happens usually is other parts of the company say, oh, I want that. Oh, yeah. I would like that. And that's the pull model, because I think you know this well too, is nobody wants transformation or change pushed onto them.
Yeah.
Nobody wants
it. Doesn't work.
It doesn't work. So
yeah.
you have to prove it's going to work. And then that gets people asking the right questions on, what does it mean for me? How do I get started?
Yeah. So, because I've had a lot of people will say, we know what we need to do to be able to do innovation better, but our executives we can't convince them. We can't get them on board with it. They're still, the way that they're approaching it is still preventing us from doing it better or transforming, as you see. I hear that occasionally, not so much anymore as I used to, but it's still out there. What would your advice be to somebody who said, you know, that's our situation at our company?
My advice to that one, which we also hear often, is let us come talk to you and show you what organizations are doing to solve it. Rather than come in and hear another vendor pitch, because that's not the effective way to work with companies. Learn about what companies in your space or even outside your segment that have impact are doing to help solve the challenges you're facing. So discover, be a learner, look at the case studies, look at the examples. One of the things that we like to do is peer-to-peer, you know, information sharing. So we'll bring clients to other clients and let them talk about what's working, what's not working, because I think that's the best way to learn. It's always easier to learn from somebody that you respect or you see as a colleague. And I think there's not enough information sharing happening on what's working and what isn't working. So that's how we try and help solve that.
I like that. I mean, there is definitely a community aspect to it. I know some just people that are naturally connectors like that. And they may be in a company and they connect their company to other companies, but that's few and far between. So to have somebody like yourselves come in who can broker that introduction, make that introduction, say, look, this is a company very similar to the challenges you're facing. Let's talk to them. I think that would be really helpful. It's not just a company out of thin air, but it's somebody who can relate to. Does that happen very often, that kind of benchmarking, if you want to think? Maybe that's the wrong word, but that kind of discussion?
It does for us. We actually encourage it actively. You know, when a chief information officer has a remit, if they're time-bounded in a job, or a chief digital officer, or a head of transformation, if someone is in a role and they have a year, 2 years to deliver something that's called meaningful change, one of the best ways we help is we get them talking to people in our network that have been through the process or are going through the process so they can learn about that. So we actually encourage it actively as part of the way we work. It's in our DNA.
Yeah.
We think, let me say it another way. If you've had great success, you're going to feel good about that success and you're probably going to be someone who wants to share it.
Yeah.
We find the ones that want to share it. We get them talking.
There you go. It's good. It's good. Yeah. You know, I don't mean this to sound controversial, but, you know, there's a lot of things that, whether it be business transformation or management or leadership, where progress has been slow when you measure it across decades, right? You say, okay, we have the same problems now that we had 20 years ago. And in other types of areas, there is progress being made. How would you gauge the progress being made in this area of the mindset and establishing mindsets? Is it a major problem? Is it getting better?
So you'd think it's getting better, given the amount of conversations that we're having in the world on innovation and change and these things. The research we've done, you know, in our own circles, in our own network, and even some, you know, extended research, we're still seeing that the majority, when I say the majority, I would say over 70% of the firms we talk to or know of still struggle with the whole idea of innovation as a practical, pragmatic idea in the business.
Yeah.
They're still treating it as over here.
Yeah.
We're talking about big ideas. So I think it's still a big challenge, but I'll tell you, I think what the larger challenge is the whole idea of product management, or how we deliver products, how we build an operating model around products. A lot of companies are still struggling. You know, in 2009, Paul, when I started Emergen, the big word that had been on the block was agile.
Yeah.
And I had been in that market actually several years prior. So it was still just a big word. You know what? It's still a big word. It's still a big word today.
Yeah.
There are still companies that we see today that will say something like, you know, we need help with our agile transformation.
Yes. Yeah.
And the first thing we say to them is, are you sure? Because when you say agile, you're actually just talking about IT. Are you talking about IT? Oh, no, we want the whole business to work this way. Then we tell them that it's not an agile transformation. It's a, you know, it's a project to product transformation. It's a business transformation.
Yeah.
And it's also educating them or talking to them about what words mean, because I think people have certain definitions in their head.
Boy, this is a breath of fresh air. Yeah, because everybody, and not everybody, but many people I talk to are struggling with that How do I get this agile transformation? And, you know, it's in all walks of innovation. It could be software, although you see it less there because they're kind of doing it. But when you get into other types of products, they want to be agile. Somebody recently told me, yeah, but if you think about prototyping and protocepting and so on, we've been agile for a long time in some of these other industries. You just haven't called it that. So I think it's words matter. And I think helping people understand what does that mean to be agile is really important.
I remember years ago, we ran a large program for, I think, one of the world's top three transportation and logistics companies. I'll leave it to you to guess. Yeah. And one of the parts of the engagement, believe it or not, was developing a glossary of terms. So taking all these buzzwords that everyone struggles with and giving them a definition in the context of that company. So when we say agile at this company, what do we mean by the word?
Yeah.
And that was actually one of the most important exercises because it baselined everybody, so they weren't perceptions about words. Everyone was clear, this is what we mean.
Yeah.
And it really helped.
Yeah, I bet it would. I can see that the value of something like that. And there are a lot of words that are loaded. What's innovation, right? You ask 10 people what's innovation, you get 12 answers. I mean, it's, you know, everybody has a different definition. And I actually used to, in the early days of this podcast, I used to ask my guests right up front, what's your definition of innovation? And most of them would say, oh, that's a great question. So words matter. And I think that idea is a great approach. Alex, where do you see things going for yourself and your company? Is it just, look, we're just going to continue because there's a huge need out there? Or is it changing somehow the approach? You know, we hear about, you know, business strategies and methodologies and they come and go. And, you know, where do you see it going in the next, let's say, 5 years?
I guess where I see it going in relation to where we're also headed is there is a significant amount of need to help companies still solve some of these challenges. And I believe Emergent is more than well positioned. You know, our 15-year history, we have dozens of successful case studies that we share with clients. We have lots of tools and IP that's used in the marketplace. But I think when we look at the business and we look at where the market's going, helping companies solve this whole idea of transformation fatigue, helping them understand how to transform into a product-led organization is what's going to be the big difference maker, mm-hmm. right? And this is where I see us basically continuing to play. I also think there's an element here of continuing to teach people inside companies how to do this well. So one of our key messages to our customers is this idea of own your transformation. So it sounds a bit unorthodox, but we typically go in with an exit strategy. We want to stand them up, teach them how to do it, and go on. Because you shouldn't outsource your innovation, just like you don't outsource your people. So teaching companies and the people in them how to do the work is the most effective thing we can do. And that's something we're very big on.
That's great. That's really great. It's been a fun conversation, Alex. I really appreciate you sharing some of those insights. If people want to learn more or connect with you or your company, what's the best way?
Best way is to go to emergent.com. You can learn about us and our work there, but I'm also accessible. People can reach me at alex@emergent.com and happy to connect with anyone and have a conversation.
Great. Any final thoughts before we close our conversation?
Final thoughts I would say is don't over-engineer or overcomplicate the word innovation. Ask the question, what problem are you trying to solve? Why are you trying to solve it? And be open to starting small and delivering incremental value in one area. Because if you can do that successfully, the rest will follow.
Great summary. Great final comment. Alex, again, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We'll put links in the show notes. And, you know, if these are the type of challenges that you're facing, you know, this Alex and his team might be good people for you to reach out to. So for that, we'll say goodbye. Take care, everybody. Have a great week. Bye for now.
Thanks for joining us this week for Innovation Talks with Paul Heller. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For additional information on today's topic, check out sopheon.com, S-O-P-H-E-O-N.com, where you will find plenty of innovation-centric content and corporate best practices. If you'd like to discuss anything with Paul or would like to get in touch with the show, email us at talks@sopheon.com.